along with my buddy Tom Fairbanks. Tom on the other side of the glass. You know how I feel, Tom, when the dusty days are upon us. Looks like we've got wind and what, up to 40, 35 mile an hour gusts or something?
Oh, mid-30s anyway.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. No, I'm not. Dust is not a friend of mine either.
No, and I've got that little hummingbird, the little mama hummingbird out on this very, very flimsy branch just outside the kitchen window, and the other day I reached up with my cell phone and to see if there were some, she was out getting some food or something, and I took a little picture, and yep, two eggs are ready to be hatched. So I hope she makes it, because that wind really, I don't know, the way they build these nests, though, it's just incredible. Anyway, it's the Buckmaster Show, Friday, April the 11th, excuse me, the 12th, day behind, 2024. It's 1030 KVOI, The Voice, Tucson's only source for live local news and talk. We are in the Green Things Zocalo Village studio, and this is part of the growing presence. This radio station, KVOI, the growing presence of Bustos Media here in town. Now five radio stations under one roof here. Our show is in, the radio show is 14 years now, 13 full years into our 14th year and my 36th year involved with Tucson Media. We have our worldwide live listening, and our podcasts go all the way back to when we started the show, January of 2011. So very extensive archive at buckmastershow.com. For our telephone interviews, that is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. A couple of media partner shout-outs, TucsonSentinel.com. Thank you, Dylan, and your team, Dan Shear, Green Valley News, and Saharita Sun. Thanks to Dan. And our Friday Focus interview today, State Senator Ken Bennett is with us on the live line, a Republican representing Legislative District Number 1 since 2023. He previously was a member of the State Senate from 1999 to 2007 and president of the State Senate from 2003 to 2007. He was Secretary of State in Arizona from 2009 to 2015. He unsuccessfully ran for governor in 2014 and the 2018 elections. And before we turn it over to talk with Senator Bennett, I want to introduce my media co-host today. And it's a pleasure to welcome back to the show, Kurt Prendergast. Hey, Kurt, how are you?
I'm good, good. Thanks for having me.
Kurt is the co-founder of the Tucson Agenda, a journalist-owned, subscriber-based online newsletter that is a weekly, daily weekday mix of original reporting and a roundup of the best local news from Southern Arizona. And your partner, Caitlin Schmidt, was with us last week, so it's great to have the agenda now. The agenda co-founders are in the rotation now and part of our Friday roundtable. So thank you very much, Kurt.
Thank you so much for having us.
All right, Senator Bennett, how are you, sir?
I'm well, Bill. How are you?
Doing well. Thank you for asking, boy. It's serendipitous to have you on today after, of course, all the big news about the Arizona Supreme Court decision reaffirming Arizona's 1864 abortion law. Why don't we begin with your take on all of this? How are you feeling about all of this?
Well, obviously, it's a very sensitive issue, and it doesn't. Very few things stir more emotions on both sides than the abortion issue, but I personally believe that the Supreme Court made the right legal ruling as to, you know, what was the policy of the state of Arizona at the time that the U.S. Supreme Court decided Roe v. Wade in 73. And the answer to that question is the 1864 law, which was reaffirmed in 1901 and I think again in 1913 and maybe even after that. But I think they made the right legal interpretation of what was the policy in this state at that time, but the practical implications of that being our policy going forward, I think, is where people are really struggling, including me.
Well, when Governor Ducey, there was the lawmakers, and you were not in the legislature at the time, I believe, second go around, had a chance to abolish the 1864 measure and then accept the 2022 abortion measure. Was that a mistake in your opinion?
I think in retrospect, it has created a conflict that now has to be resolved. I don't know why you would adopt an abortion policy for the state of Arizona in 2022 that it's 15 weeks and there's exceptions for rape and incest and life of the mother and fetal anomalies and serious issues of the viability of the fetus outside the womb. I don't know why you would adopt those parameters as the policy of the state, but leave the 1864 law, which was essentially a complete ban, with the only exception being the life of the mother, and then if Roe v. Wade is rescinded, as it was, now we've got these two competing positions, and the Supreme Court of the state rules that, well, the one in effect in 73 was the old 1864 law. So I'm not sure why they did it that way, but it created a conflict that the Supreme Court had to resolve, and they resolved it in favor of the 1864 law. But I believe that at the very least, we've got to go back in now and put in exceptions for rape and incest and the viability of the fetus, in addition to the life of the mother, which was in there.
All right, let's bring in my friend Kurt Prendergast. Kurt is with me, former Arizona Daily Star opinion page editor, and now doing very well with his new project, The Tucson Agenda. Go ahead, Kurt.
Hi, Senator Bennett. I was curious, you mentioned the practical implications people are struggling with. Could you give us a sense of, like, what is the state of the debate within the legislature? Like, what are some of those practical implications?
Well, they're the implications that include the ones I just mentioned, which is, should there be an exception for rape and incest, mm-hmm. To allow a woman to have an abortion? Should there be an exception for the viability of the fetus if a competent medical professional says that the fetus is not going to be viable outside of the womb? Should we force a woman to carry that fetus to full term? There's the implications of, do you do something in a time frame like 15 weeks or 9 or 12 or most people think viability of a fetus is 24, around there. My daughter is a labor and delivery nurse, and I've had many discussions with her about this. So do you put in a timeline that says abortions are okay until 9 weeks or until the heart starts beating, or mm-hmm. and then these other aspects of do you have an exception for rape, incest, life of the mother, and fetus inviability?
So let's go back to kind of the current sentiment among your Republican lawmakers. Is there a certain percentage of Republican lawmakers, your colleagues, that would like to that agree with this 1864 law and would just like to let things stand the way they are? There are those, correct?
There are. I don't think those are the majority of the Republicans in the legislature, but yeah, there's a good probably third of Republicans that would say, no, I'm okay just as the 1864 law was, even without an exception for rape, incest, and fetal viability. But I don't think that's a majority of Republicans.
So how do we move forward? What I think Kurt and I are wondering that, and I'm sure our listeners are as well. What's the roadmap here for moving forward on this, Ken Bennett?
I think the roadmap forward is that there will be there will be a bill or several bills. Some may be related to amending or changing the now existing 1864 law to add some of those exemptions that I'm referring to. And then I think there will be another equally charged decision about whether to put something to the voters in November that would end up kind of competing with the abortion access thing that everybody pretty much expects will make the ballot. And so I think there's two pathways. One doesn't exclude the other or rely on the other, but I think you'll see some efforts to add some aspects to the 1864 law for some of those exceptions, and maybe a week timeline or whatever, 9, 12, 15 weeks or whatever, like the 2022 law had. And then you'll see some bills about putting a question somehow crafted to be as attractive as possible to the voters as an alternative to the complete abortion access thing that I think many pro-lifers are very concerned about.
Go ahead, Kurt.
One of the things I'm curious about is the data that's used in the legislative debates. Is like I've come across these reports that from the Arizona Department of Health Services that is the like kind of the annual abortion report. Is that like a foundation for the discussion, or is it just more like political and moral?
I think it's more political and moral. I don't think this issue is driven primarily by data. Those of us that do like data look at those things, and I don't think anyone thinks, for example, that there aren't going to be any abortions in Arizona going forward, because in all practicality, if that were even the policy of the state, people would be, or most people would be able to just go to a neighboring state and have that taken care of. But it's not really driven by the data. I think those of us that are pro-life want to see as few abortions as possible, but it's more political and emotional, I would say.
The political ramifications, how do you see them out of this? Some are saying this is enough to turn Arizona from purple to blue in the fall. What's your take?
My take is that there are some swing districts that could very much be affected by how this issue is resolved. And yes, those swing districts could swing the House and the Senate to a split position. I mean, right now, Republicans control the House by one vote, 31 to 29, and we control the Senate by one vote, 16 to 14. There's two or three swing districts at least. And so if one of those is affected by a Democrat winning in November instead of a Republican, either House could go 30-30 or 15-15, or if two were affected, Democrats might control one or both bodies.
All right. Maybe this would be the natural.
Republicans start having to think about, well, if we lose one or both bodies of the legislature, what would Democrats and a Democrat governor do to things like budget, tax policy, school choice, tax increases, any one of dozens of areas where Republicans have had, I think, a lot of success for the last 15 years, and they don't want to see those go backwards either.
All right. Well, let me get a quick question in here about the budget. Where are we on the budget process right now, Senator Ken Bennett?
The budget process has been kind of on hold because the governor wanted to get the numbers in from tax collections. That happened yesterday. I don't know if she is if they've been released publicly, but she wanted to wait until the last minute to see if the tax revenues for March, which are reported about this time of the month, will bolster our revenues a little bit and keep us from having to cut as much as we would otherwise have to cut. And so there has been almost no negotiation on the budget for the last couple of months. But the bills that we have been passing through the House and the Senate are pretty much finished now, and everything is now going to shift to the budget negotiations.
All right. At this point, we're going to take a break. We're going to talk with Senator Ken Bennett after we take our first break. But right now, I want to talk about my favorite bakery in town, Mona's Danish Bakery, and we have a testimony from Kurt.
Yes, we do.
You were up at Mona's, and what was your experience?
Oh, so what I got was a bear claw and a roast beef sandwich.
Wow.
And the bear claw was tremendous. Uh-huh. I would put it as like top five bear claws of my entire life.
And that is your thing. You love the bear claws.
I love
claws.
The bear claws. Okay. The cinnamon and pastry is fantastic.
Right. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. So you would rate that as probably one of the best you've ever had.
Yeah, it was fantastic, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then you had a roast beef sandwich.
And this is worth mentioning because the roast beef sandwich was good too. It was nice and simple, but the bread was really quality. There was no like grease to it. Everything was nice and fresh and cut the right width. It was fantastic as well.
All right. Mona's Danish Bakery. You heard it. Kurt Prendergast saying he had a great experience, and so many people do. Home of the Danish Kringle, northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. And they are serving. They have a liquor license. So, Kurt, you could have had a beer with your roast beef sandwich.
That's true.
Yeah, that is an added enhancement. Mona'sDanishBakery.com. They're open 6:30 in the morning, Tuesday through Sunday. Be right back. Lot to talk about with Senator Ken Bennett right after this.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, pedestrian, bicycle, and many other transportation improvements across the region. Pima County voters approved the plan in 2006, and the RTA is finalizing a new 20-year plan for RTA board review and approval to seek public feedback on the draft plan. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, our Friday Focus interview today. State Senator Ken Bennett is with us on the live line, which is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. And each Friday, we dig deep in, with a newsmaker. And we also like to bring in a media co-host. And today, it's former Arizona Daily Star opinion page editor Kurt Prendergast, who is co-founder of the Tucson Agenda, which is doing very well, subscriber-based online newsletter. Kurt, why don't you begin the questioning for segment two?
Oh, sure. So one thing I've noticed is you are kind of developing a reputation as a Republican who bucks the party line. And I'm just kind of curious to hear what you have to say about that. In particular, I noticed there was a bill about vehicle mileage that you were the one that kind of killed that for the Republicans. Could you tell us what your thinking was?
Well, Kurt, I don't vote with Democrats, or I don't just vote blindly with Republicans. I take my role very seriously as being the representative of my district, and I vote on the merits of a bill. And if a bill has some problems or issues that can and need to be fixed, I am not going to support it unless those issues get fixed. And so, yeah, there have been four or five bills that I was the lone Republican that voted against them, and it's caused a bit of a stir in the Republican aspects of Legislative District 1 and around the state. And So some people are mad about it, but there's a reason for everything that I have done, and I'm happy to tell it to people one person at a time or here on the radio.
But sure, sure.
I'm not gonna vote for legislation just because all of the other Republicans voted for it. But when I don't vote with the Republicans, I'm not voting with the Democrats. They might be voting with me, but I'm voting on the merits of the bill.
Mm-hmm. And I am curious about that, the vehicle mileage one, about tracking vehicle mileage. Could you kind of tell us your thought process on that?
Well, it was a referral to the ballot that would have said forever and ever, it was a constitutional provision, forever and ever, Arizona would not be able to monitor, tax, or limit the miles traveled in a vehicle by an Arizonan. Now, I don't have a problem with, you know, prohibiting governments from monitoring our miles traveled, but there was no provision in there that allowed the governments to monitor their own fleets, such mm-hmm. as a county fleet of vehicles or a city fleet. And so it had that little flaw in and of itself. Some people in the business community brought it to my attention that there are some aspects of our state implementation plan related to pollution in Maricopa County primarily that needed to be exempted so that private businesses could do private agreements that did involve tracking mileage to prove how much pollution had been reduced that would have been prohibited. And then there's the overall question of how are alternative powered vehicles, mm-hmm. including electric vehicles now, but other vehicles that might, you know, be thought of in the future. You know, who's to say some bright kid at U of A next week doesn't come up with an idea where you can plug a power module or something into a vehicle and it, you know, runs for a year. Mm-hmm. Well, how are those vehicles going to help pay for the maintenance of our roadways if not by some mileage charge, even if it's an estimated charge?
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Those are three things that I thought needed addressing, and the sponsor of the bill, I met with him and the groups that had sponsored it, and they said they wouldn't make any changes, and I said, well, then you don't have my vote. And they still brought it to the floor, and I voted my conscience, and I'm willing to sit down with them again and figure out how to address these issues. But I'm not going to just be bullied into voting for something until we address some of these flaws.
Another one would like to hear your take on that you broke party ranks had to do with banning vote centers in favor of a precinct voting model. What were your thoughts there?
By the way, I'm just pulling into a trade school up in Phoenix where I'm the graduation speaker, so they're just parking me here, and I apologize if I might have to speak a word or two to some of these other folks. But that one, there are ways to make our election systems have more integrity, but banning voting centers is not one of them. That bill, which was also a referral to the ballot for the voters to vote, would have said that the highest number of voters in a precinct can be 1,000. If you applied that to Maricopa County with 2.5 million registered voters would have to have 2,500 precincts manned, stationed, and rented every election. And they have about 235 voting centers. First of all, 80% of the voters are voting by mail. Mm-hmm. The provision would have also essentially banned mail-in voting or early voting, and required the county to go to precinct-only voting. And with 80% of the voters voting by mail, in the 2022 election, you had about 240,000 voters who came to the polls in Maricopa County on Election Day. If 1,000 per polling location is the magic number, 240,000 divided by 1,000 is 240 voting locations, and Maricopa County has 235. They don't need 2,400 or almost 2,500 voting centers or polling locations to handle 240,000 voters. There'd be like 80 voters at each one. So, again, it's the practicality. Having been the Secretary of State for 6 years, I ran 12 successful and secure statewide elections during my tenure, and I am not going to support provisions, even if it's put to the voters to vote on it, that would make the conduct of our elections worse, not better.
How many initiatives will be referred to the ballot? I'm hearing there'll be a lot. Can you give us an overview?
There were 6 adopted last year, and I think we're going to see no more than maybe 5 or 6 this year. So there might be 10 or 12.
And that will be a variety. Could you give us kind of a variety, give us what we're talking about, what type of measures,
the issues? I don't have that off the top of my head, Bill.
Okay.
Last year there were 1,650 bills. This year there's over 1,700. But it'll be a variety of things, but I don't have that off the top of my head. Plus, they're waving me into the the graduation ceremony here.
Can we keep you for about 2 more minutes?
At the most, but go ahead.
Go ahead, Kurt.
Oh, well, maybe this is a good one when you only have 2 minutes, but we talked about the budget negotiations, and you know, you're saying that they're still in the infancy right now. But I want to let you know, and I'm curious to know if you have any insight. Down here in Tucson, the city council and the Pima County Board of Supervisors, this comes up quite a bit in their meetings about the cost shifts from the state, particularly with regard to the flat tax rate, the income tax rate at the state. Could you give us a sense at all of, like, what's the conversation in the legislature about shifting costs to local jurisdictions?
Well, I'm not a fan of that. I started my political public service career on the Prescott City Council, mm-hmm. So I'm not a fan at all of the state doing things that then shifts the burden of budget balancing to the cities and counties and towns to help the state out. But the previous legislature, of which I was not a part, did adopt a flat tax, 2.5%, and that has implications for state revenue, per a 30 or 40 year old agreement, we share a percentage of the state revenue with the cities and towns.
Mm-hmm.
And Usually, at least when I was president of the Senate, if we made decisions that affected a revenue stream that was going to affect cities and towns or counties, we tried to hold that harmless by making an adjustment in those formulas. Mm-hmm. With the budget constraints this year, I don't know if we'll be able to do that completely, but I will be fighting for provisions in the budget that do not balance the state budget on the backs of local governments.
All right. Senator Ken Bennett, thank you very much. I know you have a speaking engagement right now. You said you're at a graduation ceremony?
Yes, United Education Institute. It's like a technical college, vocational and technical college up here in Maricopa. They have campuses in southern Arizona as well, but there's 300 graduates and about 1,000 people. And they're starting in about 20 minutes, and they're waiting for me.
All right. Thank you very much, Senator.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you both.
Okay. Senator Ken Bennett with us on The Buckmaster Show, our Friday Focus interview. And, Kurt, he has, Republican Senator Jake Hoffman has been the one that's kind of been going after him, Senator Bennett, for, dissenting votes on conservative priorities. We talked about the one that would ensure Arizona never issues a tax based on vehicle mileage. That one, his explanation for that seemed to make sense to me. The other one was banning vote centers in favor of a precinct voting model. And he was citing his experience. He said he ran six successful Arizona elections when he was the Arizona Secretary of State. One we did not get into, ran out of time, banning transgender kids from using school bathrooms. So he, go ahead.
And I believe I read something about, but he has family members. You know, so he kind of sees his kids. He doesn't want to apply that type of law to his, or not his kids, but to his, I think, nieces and nephews.
Uh-huh. So I'm quoting actually from the Arizona Agenda, which is your sister publication. And I guess that tensions between the two have boiled over on a couple of different occasions. Hoffman said he had seen he said that he had seen too bad we just don't have the senator still with us because I'd like to hear what his take is on this, that Hoffman said he had seen Bennett sitting in the Democratic caucus room yucking it up,
just talking.
I don't know what was going on, or yucking it up, or on and on it goes, but we did run out of time and he had another commitment. But Kurt, why don't we take a break right here after I tell folks about, we are in the Green Things Zocalo Village studio. Green Things, do you do any gardening, or do you just have a potted plant that you watch?
Oh yeah, I have a garden. I'm growing, my zucchinis are coming in really nice right now.
Very good. Well, Green Things can certainly point folks in the right direction. If you went over there right now and said to one of the sales associates, where can I want to grow some zucchini. And they would point you, and not only point you, but they would walk you over to the area there at 3384 East River Road by the Rito River, just west of the Brandy Fenton Park. It's a 13-acre site. It's home to Zocalo, some great merchandise from Mexico, really all over the world there. Jan and Jack, the owners, have been sourcing some beautiful pottery. Some of it even comes from Crete, the island of Crete. So it's not just the Mexican pottery, which is wonderful, the Talavera, but stuff from all over the world. Their website is greenthingsaz.com, and Zocalo Village is the sister business, zocalovillage.com. They are open daily. They're in their 53rd year of business. Okay, we'll take a break right here, and then I'm going to talk with Kurt a little bit when we come back.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade. using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana. Plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Family-owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rialto River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Cushman & Wakefield Picor is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield Picor offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at picor.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's picor.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary. Home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. We thank State Senator Ken Bennett, who was on his way to a graduation ceremony. I think he might have been a little bit late because we kept him kept him over, but we had a lot of questions, and obviously there's a lot going on up at the legislature, certainly with the international attention that the Supreme Court decision, the Arizona State Supreme Court ruling this week by a 4-2 margin, upholding Arizona's 1864 territorial days decision on abortion. With me in studio is former Arizona Daily Star opinion page editor, Kurt Prendergast. Kurt is now the co-founder with former Arizona Daily Star award-winning reporter Caitlin Schmidt. Caitlin was actually our co-host, guest co-host last Friday here on the program. The two of them got together and founded the Tucson Agenda. Kurt, when you put this together, the Arizona Agenda came first, right?
Up that's
Phoenix.
Right. Mm-hmm. They were on
so,
for like 2 years.
You guys thought, well, you know, maybe it's like a McDonald's franchise. Uh-huh. It's time to, I don't know. What was your thought process when you and Caitlin got together on this? Obviously, you felt there was a need, and people have responded.
Yeah, so I think like early on, you know, the Arizona Agenda, they wanted to expand, and, you know, we were wanting to do something similar down here. So it was kind of a good meeting of the minds. And this is kind of like the first step, right? This is a, is this a franchise? Is this a McDonald's franchise that can be replicated around the country?
You think? I think it could be easily.
I do too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what it is it's a Substack newsletter. So Monday through Friday at 6 o'clock in the morning, you get an email. You subscribe to us, you get an email at 6 o'clock in the morning. And it'll have original reporting. It's all about, Tucson area, Southern Arizona, local politics, local government, what nonprofits are doing. And then we also curate local news. So we look for like the best news reporting of the day and we like gather it up. We, summarize it for you. We give you the link so you can read it. And we highlight the reporters, it's good for the reader to understand that like there are specific individuals out there hustling, bringing you the news.
So how do you have to monitor a lot of different news, right?
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of outlets out here.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's part of our day is we're out there, reading a ton of news for you. And we're curating it. You know what I mean? We're not aggregating. We're not throwing everything that we could possibly find. We're trying to find the best stuff. And then we, summarize it so you know what's going on.
And there's no paywall?
There is no paywall. And we offer everything for free. We do have paid subscriptions, though. So for people like what we do, they give us money and we need it, right? We're two reporters.
Yeah.
That's what that operation is two reporters who are completely, supported by subscribers.
Let's talk a little bit about the city council.
Sure.
Karen Ulick, former council person, is the latest. I think she's the 10th person to show interest and submit the resume or whatever to apply for Steve Kasachek's open seat, Ward 6. Are you surprised by the interest? And I'm just wondering, do you think that the voters said, yes, let's agree to a very substantial pay raise for council people? Do you think that might be one of the motivating factors?
It's very possible, right?
It's like a lot of more money. Right? I mean, yeah.
Yeah. So one thing that's really jumped out at me is, so this is Prop 413 from last year.
Yeah.
And so voters approved it. And part of the pitch to voters was like, this would allow the council to focus completely on their jobs. Like they were doing a full-time job, getting a part-time salary, right? Cause it was pretty dismal what they were getting paid. Another part of the pitch was that it would kind of open the door for more people to be able to serve on the council. Cause if you have, a family you're trying to support and you're getting paid $24,000 a year, that's hard, right? Yeah, so now they get paid significantly more. So we wrote about this the other day is Councilwoman Nikki Lee and Councilman Paul Cunningham, they've both now been able to quit their other jobs so they can focus, full time on their council jobs.
Mm-hmm.
And as I'm very curious about like the other part of the pitch about having more people being able to serve on the council, we have this batch of 10 candidates and like a lot of them are familiar faces. A lot of people that we know, like Karen Ulick.
Ulick and then... Nina Trasoff, former council person also, and both Trasoff and Ulick have said that they would be more a caretaker kind of role, that they would not run.
Mm-hmm.
But some of the others, I believe, have said that they would run. So it's going to be interesting to see whether the council goes with the caretaker position or just decide on they feel this is the best candidate.
Mm-hmm. And is this the first test of Prop 413?
Yeah.
Are we going to see like people come out of the woodwork who wouldn't be able to before?
Right.
I think the real test is going to be, in the next actual round of city council elections. But we could be on the verge of having a lot of people enter the public sphere who normally wouldn't be able to, which is kind of exciting.
That's a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
So you're planning at the agenda to do as much political coverage as possible, correct?
Yeah, that's right. It's kind of
to let people know who these candidates are and some of the legislative races, all of the legislative races affecting us, right?
Yeah, I mean, for us, kind of like the ceiling is Congress, right? So CD6 and CD7, and then we're going all the way down below. We're doing like legislative, county level, constables, justice of the peace, like a lot of offices that. In every newsroom I've ever worked at, it's always been like, we got to cover these races, but it's just very difficult to get into it. But we have the bandwidth to do it, and that's what we're going to focus on.
All right. And again, people, how do they find out more about the agenda?
Go to TucsonAgenda.com.
And you mentioned that folks can subscribe, and it's a reasonable, I guess, not a lot of money, right, monthly?
Yeah. So, I mean, you can need a yearly subscription. It's $120, so it's $10 a month.
All right. Kurt Prendergast, thank you very much, Kurt.
Right, thank you.
Kurt, co-founder of the Tucson Agenda, And we'll see what happens with your expansion, because you are having kind of a summit meeting this weekend,
yes,
right?
We are.
With your with your buddies from the Arizona agenda to kind of figure out where do we go from here, right?
Yeah, right.
After now the growing pains are a little bit behind you, so we'll see what happens.
Yeah, it's been 9 months of just hustle. Now we're getting to plan a little bit more.
All right, Kurt, thank you very much.
All right, thank you.
All right, coming up next, Weekend Watch with Dan Gibson. It's Buckmaster on a Friday afternoon.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com.
At Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax. The RTA is the largest annual funder of regional transportation improvements in the region, averaging more than $100 million in tax revenue each year. The RTA is preparing a new 20-year plan for public review prior to a May 2025 election. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates. Nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in Southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in Southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Are you ready to immerse yourself in a diverse culture while wandering through bustling markets, sampling exotic cuisines, or forging connections with people from all walks of life? Well, Bon Voyage Travel is here to plan your perfect journey. Whether you're setting off on a solo expedition, embarking on a group adventure, or simply dreaming of far-off destinations, we can help create your custom experience. The road ahead is filled with endless possibilities. Visit bvtravel.com to find your specialized Bon Voyage Travel advisor today.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
And away we go with the weekend. When I hear that music, Stir It Up, I'm ready to stir it up and get into the weekend. Weekend Watch, presented by our friends over in Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. It's time to start planning to visit a beautiful area of the land of enchantment, the southwest corner of New Mexico. Folks over there are very ready to welcome our Tucson listeners with open arms. Only about a three-hour drive east of Tucson, lots to do, including hiking in the Gila National Wilderness and visiting the world-famous Cliff Dwellings National Monument. For more on what to do, and again, there's a lot to do over in that area, beautiful scenery, and of course, some great places to eat as well. Southwest New Mexico, spelled out .org, your starting place before you make that about three-hour drive east of Tucson. Let's welcome now the host of Weekend Watch. Here's Dan Gibson. Dan, how was your week?
Oh, it was great. Spent a little time in Vegas last weekend, which is why I sadly had to pull a Matt Russell and wasn't available. But I'm back. I'm ready. Big week. Lots happening. So I hope you've got another hour for the show. Can we just bump whatever's after? I don't actually know.
There you go. And so you had a very, shall I say, profitable weekend in Las Vegas.
Oh, yeah. Oh yeah, up like $400. It was great.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, the eating and the hotels and everything, I am down. Vegas took more of my money than I gave it, but I mean that I got back. But still, the wagering part went well, and I'm just going to focus on that for now. You know.
Yeah. Always fun up in America's gambling mecca. So what's going on here in Southern Arizona?
Well, let's talk about one of my absolute favorite restaurants here in Tucson, Arizona, Zamam's. They have reopened their location on Broadway and massively expanded it. That's at 2731 East Broadway. It is the restaurant where I had lunch on the day of my wedding way back in 2000. I was briefly in a segment on Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives that was hosted at Zamam's. It is absolutely a place I treasure, and it for good reason, because the food is incredible. People who work there are incredible. But it's part of the Sunshine Mile expansion through Rio Nuevo. They have opened a bar next door called Zarays. I'm probably pronouncing that wrong. That's showing international sports. And so now it is no longer a BYOB establishment at Zamam's. They have alcohol, beer, wine, all those things to serve. And then they are opening a coffee shop coming up as well, joint venture with Savaya, and then space for other international food trucks and carts. So there's a lot happening at Zamam's now, but it's continuing to happen. You can learn more at z-street.com for more information.
Tell me a little bit about Ethiopian cuisine. I know very little about it. What is it kind of based on?
A lot of like stews. So injera is the base of the cuisine. It is a spongy grain. It's a like almost like a spongy tortilla, like a sourdough tortilla that they put on the base of the plate, serve family style. So there's dishes with lentils and spinach and greens and lamb and beef. And they're all these sort of like rich stews you eat with your hands. It's really a spectacular place to go with other people because you kind of spin it around. They have these sampler plates. You each pick three items. You can try everything everyone else has. It's a lovely time. Next time the family goes, my family goes, Gibson's, you're in. You're coming with us.
Yes, sounds like a very interactive dining experience.
And delicious. Oh, my gosh, so delicious.
What else is going on this weekend?
Well, we are in the middle of the Pueblos de Maiz Festival. This is a cooperative festival with other cities of gastronomy around the Western Hemisphere, including Merida and San Antonio, Texas. That kicked off last night, I believe, with a collaborative dinner with the Gastronomical Union of Chefs. But there is still plenty to see today from 6 to 7:30 p.m. You can go to the Desert Vista campus of Pima Community College, and there's a free cooking demonstration with chefs visiting from both San Antonio, Texas, and Merida, Mexico, learning how to make innovative maíz dishes. My favorite part of it is the free community festival that's happening at Kennedy Park on Saturday. Live music basically all day from 4 p.m. to 10 p.m. All ages. It's free. Performances, family-friendly activities, live art installations, plus a ton of food and drink. It is an excellent, excellent time. Last year, Los Opson were the headliners. This year, it is Angel Norteño, but it is a heck of a good time and absolutely free out there at Kennedy Park.
All right. Those are two very good suggestions. I'll take a third one, Dan Gibson.
Well, speaking of things Dan Gibson loves, Dragoon Brewing Company is having its, believe it or not, 12th anniversary this weekend.
Wow.
That's tomorrow from noon to 9 p.m. at their location over there at 1871 West Grant, on Grant just west of Interstate 10. It is their theme this year is local love. The community has been so good to them that they want to celebrate back. New beer collaborations, food, music, a spring market with 20 vendors, new double collaboration with Monsoon Chocolate and XO Roasters, music by Tom Wallbank, Golden Boots, DJ Nada, and more. Multiple food trucks. The event itself is free, but obviously it brings some money for beer and for food and things, and apparently all this shopping. That is starting at noon, and live screen printing and photo booth. I mean, what more could you ask for from an event?
Well, Monsoon Chocolate now has opened up an outlet right by one of our great sponsors, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and they're doing very well, at least from all the cars that are out front every weekend when I go by.
Oh my gosh, best ice cream in town right there at Monsoon Chocolate. I mean, think of them as like the bonbons and the chocolate bars and things like that, which they've gotten national acclaim for. Best Choco Taco you'll ever have in your entire life right there at Monsoon.
All right. On that sweet note, thank you very much, Dan Gibson. Have a great weekend, Dan.
You too.
The Buckmaster Show is a presentation of Bill Buckmaster Communications, which is wholly responsible for the content of our program. Original theme music composed by our German friend, Christophon. Thanks to my assistant, Rosemary Brandt, engineer-producer Tom Fairbanks, and the entire team here at KVOI and, of course, Bustos Media. So, Bill Buckmaster with you, wishing everybody well, back with you on Monday. Have a great weekend.